Hi, everyone. My name is Anthony Negron, host and producer of Spark Chat, a podcast dedicated to capturing and sharing the personal and professional journeys of some of New York City's top thought leaders around education. We look to cover an assortment of topics while highlighting each individual. This podcast is generously supported by the Hive New York City Leadership Grant. On this episode, I'm joined by Steve Osberry, great friend, collaborator, and current executive director of Brooklyn College Community Partnership. Make sure to stay tuned to after the show for additional content. Hope you enjoy. My following guest is an arts program developer, youth development specialist, nonprofit manager, artist, arts consultant, and community organizer in Brooklyn, New York. His focus is on content development, program management, partnership development, college access, and professional development. He also has experience in event management, fundraising, publicity, and environmental opera. He is a good friend and colleague, and I'm thankful for having Mr. Steve Osberry, Executive Director at Brooklyn College Community Partnership, on this podcast. Thank you so much, Steve, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
I'm really excited to really kind of take a deep dive into a little bit of your history before leading into the Brooklyn College Community Partnership. And in doing some research on some of your previous professional work and academic career, it is clear that the arts has always been a passion of yours. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about where did that passion come from?
Well, I came from a family that for whom the arts were really, really important. My dad played piano and sang he was actually a choir boy in St. John the Divine, and that made a really deep impact on his life. And my brother is a composer and musician, and so I was always around music. So that was actually like probably my first passion just by being a kid. But then I started drawing when I was young, and I always identified as an artist first. That's the only thing I ever really wanted to do with my life, and that just sort of defined who I was.
That's great. Was there a specific medium in art that you really
I'm kind of an everything artist.
That's cool. Awesome.
And then everything artists typically are looking for also a kind of framework for what they do for everything, and I was seeking that for a long time. I started with drawing. I ended up doing a lot of video and film work. I wrote a screenplay for a short film called The Debt, which won a prize at the Cannes Film Festival.
Awesome.
And did some conceptual art projects in the 90s, performance art, bookmaking. And then I kind of put it all together. I went to graduate school in San Diego and did an opera. And an opera is a really great unifying force when you're interested in a lot of different artistic disciplines.
Yeah.
And it was an environmental opera. It was based on Biosphere 2, the people who lived in that kind of utopian man-made ecosystem in a closed system in Arizona.
Yeah.
And so that's something that I hope to continue in the future. And I've done some, similar projects too.
That's really cool. That's awesome. And I definitely love to see if I can get a hand of that that film to check it out.
Mm-hmm.
So then, given all this experience, what eventually then led you to transition from an artist into the education field? And what were some of your lessons learned early on from being an educator?
Yeah, that's a great question. I always had a kind of parallel career doing teaching or working in education. My first job was at Museum of Modern Art, and I had a great mentor there in the education department, Philip Yanowin. And I think his love for that, you could still love art and be a teacher or an administrator and have that kind of passion and maintain it, was really kind of foundational for me to learn that. And then I taught art at UCSD, at the New School, and in the community in San Diego. So I had a lot of great people along the way who were really passionate about education and the arts. And I think that, I'm a big believer in integration, and even when I learned, when I was doing the opera project, I learned about a lot of scientific concepts like self-organization and biodynamic gardening, this idea that different plants work together, you know, to survive, and like monoculture, monoagriculture is like a bad thing. When you plant different kinds of plants, diversity is basically a positive thing for growth and for living things. And self-organization, this idea that like youth will eventually self-organize if you give them some time and space, works really well with teenagers. You know, don't order them around. Like, give them an opportunity to like learn from each other. And that was really important to me, and it's very instrumental in the creation of BCAL.
Awesome. That's really great. So now we're going to transition, because there's a lot of history with BCCP. So I definitely want to give the appropriate time for you to talk about your work and kind of journey with this organization. As I mentioned, you have such a rich history with the Brooklyn College Community Partnership, and you now serve as the executive director. Can you first share with us, what is BCCP and what type of experiences does it provide young people who participate in its programming?
So BCCP is Brooklyn College Community Partnership, and it was started by a psychology professor here named Nancy Romer, who really wanted to connect Brooklyn College to the communities of Brooklyn. And being an adolescent psychologist, she decided that, you know, youth would be a great community to sort of start with. She ended up teaching service learning courses in psychology. It also added a little adolescent psychology and some sort of and service learning, and created a course in which students would do 63 hours of field work working in a nonprofit or school and supporting the community members and then reflecting on their experience. It turned out that the class was a huge success. It's still running today. It did make an impact on the community, and I think it made an impact on Brooklyn College. And being in the psychology department, again, the goal was really to for both college students and the high school students and middle school students to build relationships with each other. Right. And so, you know, mentorship is a key in developing, what we're doing.
Yeah.
Teenagers and, you know, 12 to 18 are really in this space where they're exploring who they are. And they really need support, and they need to know that there are people who have been down the path that they're about to go down and have succeeded. people in youth development talk a lot about safety, and it's almost become a cliche. But safety is really critical in that process, because it's actually a foundational element of our brain science, it's something that if we don't feel safe and secure in who we are and where we are, we don't really function. We're always in some kind of fight or flight mode.
And
when we talk about BCAL, I'll talk a little bit more about it was really critical for us to create safe spaces for kids and build safe relationships where they could really explore who they are. A lot of young people just don't feel safe at home. They don't feel safe in the schools. They don't feel safe in their neighborhoods.
Yeah.
So our goal, first and foremost, was really to create a place where they could feel that safety.
That's great. That's really great. So before we started the podcast, I got this really awesome tour of this amazing, amazing Maker Lab space. And I would love to hear a little bit more about the genesis and the development of this space. Can you talk a little bit about the process of creating it, who were involved in that development, and some of the maybe challenges you face through that development?
Sure. So the history of BCCP is, there's another important element. Nancy Romer ran the organization through the 90s, and then we brought on someone named Diane Reiser, who really turned BCCP from a program to an organization.
Okay.
And so it kept getting bigger and bigger, and we kept adding things like from our first program, which was called Project Peace, which was social justice programs and writing about youth, writing about their experiences, identity issues, race, class, gender. sexual identity, et cetera.
Yeah.
We moved from to college access and running college prep programs, work readiness programs, arts programs. And Diane, who came over from the Fresh Air Fund, was really instrumental in filling out the program.
Mm-hmm.
I came in 2003.
Okay.
And we got, shortly after that, we got some grants from the 21st Century Learning Center, which is a federal program.
Right.
Which is under threat right now. So for all your listeners, please write to your congressman and save 21st Century. It's a great program.
Totally.
We received the funding, and we received this amazing 9,000 square foot space from Brooklyn College to use.
Yeah.
And we decided to get together with an architect and some students from Brooklyn College Academy, which is a high school on campus, and really redesign this very strange gym with these walls with no ceilings and figure out how could we make it into a youth utopia.
Yeah.
You know, what did they want? What was their ideal of an after-school space?
Yeah, yeah.
We literally did a sort of unit on utopias with them. Like, what is utopian thinking?
Yeah.
You know, and the designer was really into it. And so we built this space with kids. And ever since we opened in fall 2005, I mean, it's been really popular with young people in the neighborhood. So one year we had to close it down because we had too many kids.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. Can you talk a little bit about some of the things that they can do? So if I'm a student walking through the space, what are some things that I can see and do in these different kind of pods?
Sure. Well, first of all, I want to say that, you know, we really believe that young people should be agents of their own experience. Like,
sure.
We can't tell them what to do. We want to support and facilitate their emerging voice.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that sense, the space is kind of built with that in mind, that I think when you came in, you said, wow, this is such an inspiring space. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, again, inspiration can be a little bit, you know, cliche, but it's like we want to inspire kids.
Yeah.
That is our first and foremost thing, to do things on their own. We want them to participate with the space and feel inspired above and beyond what adults have to say, what their agenda is,
right,
and what their interests are. But I'm really into this, you know, keep the space inspired.
Sure.
You know, keep youth inspired. So the space, the way space operates, and I want to give a lot of credit to Isabel Morris-Rigau, who's the program director here.
Awesome.
Is that young people come in and they're allowed to sort of experience the space for community time in the beginning.
Yeah.
And for middle schoolers, it's really the first time that they're actually given some choices and some options in their lives.
Yeah, yeah. These
poor guys are ordered around all the time, you know.
Right, right.
So it's like having a space like this that where they can really, you know, find areas to just chill out, to talk amongst themselves, to explore music or dance or art or just, you know, or just draw or read in their own time. You know, that happens in the beginning.
Sure.
Then we come and we have a sort of discussion with them, and then there's some reflection time at the end. And in between that, they do arts workshops.
Really
it
cool.
could be Maker Lab, it could be music, it could be dance. We're doing some wearable tech. We're doing fashion. We do a lot of different things here.
Yeah.
And physical education, health and nutrition.
That's really cool. It's a really diverse menu of options that kids can participate in.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to kind of do it justice with just your words and describing the space. As Steve mentioned before, you know, as soon as I came here and kind of walked around for the first time, it automatically inspires creativity. There's so much color and there's so much unique shapes, and it's hard not being in the space and not wanting to do something and making something. So it's really you know, kudos to everyone that was involved. Really, really amazing work. Steve, I want to talk about this because you and I are kind of somewhat in the same boat. So whether it be nonprofit, whether it be for profit, it's really rare these days seeing an individual work at a space for such a long time. Right? Can you talk a little bit about what keeps you continuously engaged and passionate about the work you do for Brooklyn College Community Partnership?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's always challenges staying in the same place for a long period of time.
Sure.
But there's also a lot of benefits, and I really think that if you can do it, they outweigh them all, because the greatest thing is that you can reflect back on your experience and you can see change and growth. You can see your impact. You can see the organizational impact on the lives of youth. Mm. I mean, I think the most important thing for me is the thing I love the most about this job is when young people come back and they're already in the professional world or they're in college.
That's great.
And they come back and they reflect on their experience here, or they want to help out. We have a young man from FIT who's here doing a workshop. He basically set up a design salon and studio, and he's designing a line with high school students, and he just called me out of the blue.
Yeah.
Another young person who was a middle school student, a high school student with us, came back and he said, "Oh, I'm majoring in engineering. What can I do?" I was like, "Okay, you're hired. You're teaching coding. Let's go."
Yeah.
And that's always a good feeling, this, like, you know, to see this kind of chain of mentorship, one person contributing to another over time, and see the development of young people into adults.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I give a lot of credit to the people who mentored me, because, in a sense, you know, every few years I had new things to do, which made it more interesting.
Right.
As executive director, of course, like, the whole field opens up. You're responsible for the whole shebang. And here, I want to give credit to the new principal investigator, Erica Niwa, who's a professor of psychology here.
Okay.
And she has a really incredible passion for working with youth and for research.
Mm.
So I'm really excited to be, she's a new addition to BCCP, but I'm really excited about working with her in the future.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And how big is the team of staff that you work with?
Right, so we have 9 full-time. Erica is full-time as well, but she is a professor at the college, and she works with us.
Yeah.
And then we have about, you know, anywhere from 30 to 40 part-time at any given time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we have about 7 programs. We're in, I think, 5 high school and middle school campuses, and then Brooklyn College.
Yeah.
We serve about 750 kids.
Okay.
And we're also working with the DOE to institute college visits. And that's a kind of area that we want to expand, because we feel like for young people, even elementary school kids, to come to Brooklyn College and see BCAL.
Yeah.
And to feel like so welcomed in a space like this on a college campus is going to be a little, could be life changing.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. And do you notice, like, have you seen kids transition from being here as a participant in middle school and then actually attending the college?
Yeah, we have seen that. It's, you know, we always want to encourage as much as possible.
Sure.
It's like not a huge amount of kids, but we definitely have seen those kids, and we stay in touch with those folks.
That's awesome. That's really cool. And so, you know, for me, you know, I've been with my organization for almost 14 years now. So I started pretty young, 17, 18 years old, somewhere in that ballpark. And, you know, I think one of the things that kind of really keeps me engaged is definitely a lot of the things that you've mentioned, but also somewhat is the culture of the organization and kind of being around mentors and other amazing educators who can help kind of grow me professionally and personally.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about how is the culture like for you at BCCP?
Yeah, sure. I think that learning from people and mentors, you know, we generally think of them as people who are older than us, and they're definitely people older than me who were instrumental in me becoming who I am,
right,
professional identity, and so on. So Diane, for sure, and Nancy. But also, you know, all my staff are amazing. I want to credit, like, Nixon Mercedu, who's now the deputy director of the organization, for his leadership.
Yeah.
And Isabel, just Alan Villavisar, who's been with us for a long time.
Cool.
You know, all the staff, and then just the college students year after year,
yeah,
what they bring to the table. They give us feedback at the end of the year. I learn from them. And, of course, the kids. You know, I mean, I'm not in the field as much as I would like to be anymore. But,
That's a tough part.
Yeah, I miss that for sure. But somehow, you know, I'm always able to pick up, you know, something from what they're giving. So I think that all this kind of mentorship, again, it's like kind of bi-directional, you know.
Right.
People are giving to us. We're giving to other people. We learn it's top down. It's bottom up. You know,
yeah.
if you really believe that you have something to learn from everyone, you know, you will grow. You will change. You will develop. And that's definitely part of my mission and what I want. You know, everybody to share in that and
yeah.
BCCP in the future.
Yeah, and that's a really great way to look at it, and really great advice also to think about. You know, I feel like the word mentorship gets thrown around a lot, so I'm really glad that you point that out. So you've been an executive director for some time now, and I was wondering if you could provide any advice to anyone looking to either run their own organization or may have recently been kind of promoted into that role at their respective institution.
Yeah, I there's a couple of things I can share about that. Okay, where should I start, actually?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to start with resources.
Okay.
There are tremendous resources outside of your organization that you can draw upon. And I think that to this question, actually, I just started with a woman named Beth Rosenberg from Tech Kids Unlimited.
Oh, yes.
An ED meetup in Brooklyn. And we had about 8 people. It was on a horrible snowstorm day.
Oh, no.
But we had 8, you know, people who showed up. That being an executive director can be a little isolating.
Mm-hmm.
Because you basically can't really bare your soul to, you know, staff.
Sure.
Board members, you know, you're kind of on your own plane in a way. So the best people to really talk to are other executive directors.
Interesting.
So building relationships with other EDs out there, knowing the resources, executive coaches, people like that. There's an organization called Catch a Fire that gives sort of free resources from professionals who are skilled that you might not have in your organization. So just kind of networking and connecting with people and other organizations. Like Hive has been amazing for
yeah.
that. Like I learned so much through Hive. I'm like endlessly indebted to them.
Yeah.
Because I just met so many great people from different organizations that are, you know, no one's the same, but people are doing similar things.
Yeah,
so just
yeah.
having those conversations. So I would say make sure you're not too insular.
Okay.
And,
okay.
you know, not too external facing either,
yeah.
but somewhere between so that you don't feel you're stuck or isolated, because
yeah.
that can be bad for you, bad for your organization. Second thing I would say is self-care, you know.
Yeah.
It's like you really have to, it's a hard job,
yeah.
you know, so you got to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
And if you don't, everyone else around you is going to suffer.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like that thing with the, you know, in the airplane where like when the oxygen comes down, do you put it on your kid or do you
right.
put it on yourself first?
Right.
You actually got to put it on yourself first.
Right.
You can't help anyone else. So that's a little bit of how I look at it. You've got to like just be ready.
Yeah.
You know,
and yeah,
that,
yeah.
so what am I talking about? Literally. Anything from, you know, meditation, working out, you
yeah.
know, calling people when you need, you know, when you feel a lot of stress.
Yeah.
And then, you know, again, like the constant learning, you really got to keep up with what's going on and, you know, how to, you know, coaching of staff, meetings,
yeah,
organizing
yeah.
meetings, you know, all kinds of professional development, just stay open to learning.
That's great. Yeah. And it's funny you mentioned the kind of self-care. So I just wrapped up this leadership program through a partnership of the New York Community Trust and Baruch College, an amazing cohort I just had. And one of the things we talked about early on in this program, and these are comprised of different professionals in the nonprofit world and a lot of different roles. And we talked about self-care and how important
yeah.
that is, because, you know, as you move up and you know, in within your organization, you know, you kind of have less time for that. And it's
yeah.
so important for your mental health to, you know, make sure that you take time so that you can make, you know, the right decisions and you can, you know, do your best at your job and not kind of run yourself out.
Yeah. And pick great people to work with.
Yeah, exactly.
And we have
that
a really great
a
team here. And a lot of them have worked here for a long time. So, you know, that is also critical.
Cool. Well, Steve, this is the sad part. So we're at the end of our conversation. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. Do you have any last thoughts before we kind of wrap up? But I definitely also want you to kind of put out any social plugs so that people can stay connected to you and the work that you do.
Yeah, for sure. You know, come check out our website, of course. Welcome to bccp.org. And you can see what kind of stuff we have going on. Come visit us, basically. We're Brooklyn College. Yes. You know, we're, 2900 Flatbush Avenue. Bedford Avenue. Come check out our space, BCal. We love to have visitors and show them around the college. Yeah. And also, think about college visits. Think about coming to Brooklyn mm-hmm. College with your kids and cool. whatever program that you have. We'll definitely take good care of you.
Awesome. Thanks again, Steve. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Anthony.
Steve brings so much positive energy and is doing such amazing work. And I really want to thank him for his time. And I want to thank you all so much for listening. And please rate, review, subscribe, and share the Spark Chat podcast. As always, I wish you all my best, and do stay tuned for additional content. Take care, everybody.
All right, so if our listeners are still tuned in, we are at the kind of bonus portion of our podcast where we, as you kind of already told from, or already have heard from previous episodes, we kind of really get into some really quirky questions and see where that conversation goes. So Steve, for our first thing, in the news story of your life, what would the headline say?
Okay. Everything artist uses creativity and utopian thinking to lead youth organization into a bright future.
Ooh, man. If you're not pulled in by that, I don't know what's going to get you. Maybe your response to our next question may pull you in. So awesome. That was great. What mythical creature would improve the world most if it existed?
I would say the Magnetoidopolis.
Okay.
Which is basically this giant crab-like creature.
Okay.
That basically takes all the guns in the world.
Yeah.
And just kind of like magnetically like draws them in. They stick to him.
Yeah.
And then he self-destructs.
Awesome. So he has a purpose, a beginning, middle, and end, a clear purpose.
Yeah.
That's really great. Cool. Awesome, Steve. Thanks again. This was great.